Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Unnamed MMA Podcast with Jordan Sherwood and myself, Mario Aaron. Follow Jordan on Twitter at WoodOnESPN1000. We got Fighter of the Year, Breakout Fighter of the Year, halfway through the year, picks coming up for you in this one. But before we do that, we are 1 week out from the return of McGregor, and it's happening. And how are we feeling on it? Because I'm excited. The promos, I'm falling for it.
Promos are starting to show up in my timeline. People, as I talked to you before, and we've talked about on this show, you know, when there's a big fight, it's the casual fans, it's your friends that kind of occasionally watch it, but not really. They ask you about it, and they say, "Hey, is this happening? Did I hear correctly? Conor McGregor is fighting." You know, it's a big deal, so it's happening. I think this week, as we get through the fourth, will really start to highlight it, because they'll have the press conference, they'll have the ceremonial weigh-ins, etc. Because I think prior to that, you know, not being on ESPN affects it a little bit. Like, there's not that coverage leading into it. But absolutely, we are here, we arrived, and I am very, very confident that he's going to make the walk, and that cage door is going to close, and Bruce Buffer is going to announce his name on Saturday night.
I'm so excited just for his entrance, just to hear that pop and like the things that they're going to do for it. I've never been more excited. And look, hate him or love him, you know, especially the things he's done outside the cage. He's the biggest star in the sport. And the fact that he's going to do this is awesome. And it's against Max Holloway. It's going to be a firework. And it's just this card as a whole. I mean, we're going to talk about just which one we look forward to the most on it. Like, I am so pumped for it. And for so many different fights, I mean, I can't stop thinking about it. And like, to your point, I just moved in with three other guys, which is very funny to do at 27 years old. I feel like that's something to do at 22, is move in with three guys. I just did that. And they're all going, "We got to get Paramount Plus because we got to watch McGregor." And I was like, good thing I have it, so we're good. And two, it's just to have that type of feeling of big fight. It's so amazing. Because I think the last time we felt that culturally was probably honestly, where everyone was in on it. Like, even bars.
Tyson? Oh, okay. Are you talking about that standpoint?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. I go back just several years probably to just McGregor and Mayweather.
Yeah.
You know, that type of thing. You know, when I was living in South Florida, we used to host UFC fight nights, and you know, I would have it once or twice a year during the big fights, but I also did have it for the McGregor Mayweather. And I think that was the last time that I had people come over and watch the fights. I think it is on par with that. And I do believe that it's going to just be an awesome sports day, because I do believe also it's the World Cup semifinals that'll take place earlier today on July 11th. So it is happening, and it's now also happening from the standpoint as I'm really diving into how I'm going to bet this fight.
Yeah.
And, you know, the narrative, at least here, is that on the McGregor side, he's been away for so long. You know, what has he been doing? How's he going to look? Cardio has always been a narrative about him, but quite frankly, that's only a narrative that has shown up, I think, twice in his career, once to hurt him, and that was the loss to Nate Diaz. And then the second time in the fight, the second fight with Nate Diaz, but he bounced back. Like, he was fading, and then he reverted back, and obviously we know how that fight resulted. So that's that narrative there, that like, maybe he's going to not be able to go hard, and he's going up against a guy that will likely have a cardio advantage. But on the flip side, it's, you know, what is Max Holloway going to look like at 170? This is his first time fighting at 170. He doesn't really have a natural body type frame for 170 pounds. And if you remember the first time that Max Holloway jumped up a weight class, it was against Dustin Poirier at 155, and he looked terrible. He wasn't able to take the damage from a 155er like he was able to do walking through 145ers when he was on that 12-fight win streak and the featherweight champion of the world. So will we see a similar narrative? Because we know, what's Max Holloway not going to do? He's not going to wrestle. He's not going to work. He's not going to work the advantages that we've seen get how we've seen Conor McGregor get exploited. So it's a very interesting. I haven't yet fired off a bet on it yet. I might now talking and doing the show with you here. I might do it today, but it's very interesting to see how it's going to play out for sure. I'm excited.
On the hallway front as well. I mean, look at a lot just past fights that he's had. He's taken a good amount of damage. Like he beat Dustin Poirier, yeah, but he took a lot of damage. Even if you go back to the Gaethje fight, the last second knockout, he took a lot of damage in that one. Ilya knockout, Oliveira didn't go his way either. And then you jump up in weight, like you mentioned, and you're taking a guy that's throwing just 170 power at you when you're just not used to it. How does that go? Does he fall again? A lot of talk on McGregor's age. Max is up there. Max has been through Lord knows how many battles in the UFC. Does that go to his advantage? Does it not? You know, we shall see. I keep wondering of like when. I think I know how I want to bet it. For me, Jordan, it's a question of when too. Like, when am I going to get the best number? Because people are going to come in and bet McGregor just because of the name right away. I have four friends that I've talked to that they're like, oh, dude, I'm putting 200 on McGregor just because it's Conor McGregor. It's like, okay, well, that's good. You know, let me sell you some Bitcoin too while you're at it or something. So that's going to be interesting. But the
line's not moving. Like I looked at it. Line, when it announced, the line really jumped. And McGregor, a lot of money came in on Holloway right away. But now it's trending like money's coming in on McGregor. And that line is kind of staying put at around the same spot. I think I saw it at yesterday or two. So I think we'll start to see a little bit more shift come Monday when it is fight week, when people realize, okay, now it is happening. McGregor is fighting. They see the press conferences. They see it, all the news in and around it.
Yeah.
And that money, that line on Max Holloway should go down pretty dramatically.
It should. Besides this fight, Jordan, what are the other ones you're kind of most excited to bet going into it next week?
Oh, from a betting standpoint, right now there's two that I have my eye on. I haven't fired off on them yet. I'm probably waiting maybe through today, tomorrow to get through some World Cup action. But Terrence McKinney right now is a $1.50 favorite against Bobby King Green. And look, it's Terrence McKinney. He's in the conversation of best one-round fighter because all his fights either win or lose in the first round. But he is an athletic, young, freakish athlete that hits with a ton of bricks. Bobby Green is, you know, a very elusive fighter, but he's up there in age now. He's going to strike. And the advantage, like we were just talking about with Max Holloway, where Holloway was able to take a lot of damage, just walk through stuff. That's how Bobby Green, slip and rip, very good movement. He doesn't have that now at 37, 38 days old. So I almost feel like a Terrence McKinney KO prop would be something that I'm really looking at. Get that number down even better because Bobby Green has been finished via submission, but also he was knocked out, obviously, by Mauricio Rufi a couple of fights ago. So I'm really looking at that number and maybe trying to get a little bit better value on a Terrence McKinney knockout. The other one that I'm thinking about, and I've never liked him as a fighter. I've never liked him as a person. But but this guy also had one of the most brilliant performances ever in a championship fight. Cody Garbrandt is plus 320 against Adrian Yanez. And Garbrandt's not the same fighter he was when, you know, he won the Bantamweight Championship of the World against Dominic Cruz. I still will argue that might be the best championship performance ever in a championship fight. I'll argue just how great he was. And he's been shinny, but he's still got power. He's still got movement. And that's the fight he's going to get against Adrian Yanez. Is Adrian Yanez three times better than Cody Garbrandt at this stage in their career? Maybe, but like, I like Cody Garbrandt maybe in that fight at plus 320. Just, you know, throw a little sprinkle on there. I just don't think he should be as devalued as he currently is. So those are the two that I'm specifically looking at outside of obviously the main event. What about you?
So I agree with you on the Garbrandt front, especially because I think the last outing, I don't want to say impressed, but I thought he looked pretty solid just considering where he's at in his career and like kind of where we've seen the downfall essentially of what's happened to him. So I don't mind that. Like you said, plus 320 is just absolutely insane. The one fight that I've been keeping an eye on that I think I'm probably going to bet. Honestly, I might just do it today because I want to avoid that tax in Illinois. Is Mario Bautista versus Corey Sandhagen. I think Bautista being an underdog is perfect. It's perfect. Like the plus 125, please and thank you. I think he's the more well-balanced fighter than Corey. I think, especially looking at just his last couple of opponents, I feel like he's improved in every single fight he's in. Corey obviously is going to have the stand-up advantage. Obviously, he's going to have the reach advantage. But Mario's proved times over and over again he can kind of get inside that reach. He can do his damage. He can take you down. He can keep you there. And he's going to look for some action and do some damage while he's on top of you. He's not just going to sit there and lay on top of you like it's a wet blanket trying to get through the round. No, he's going to do some, leave some mark and make sure that you get up there pretty scathed up and you're going to be wondering if you want to do the next round. I really like him at plus money versus Corey. Also transparent, I don't like Corey at all. He's like one of my least favorite fighters in the UFC. I have no idea why. He just irks me.
I love how you're handicapping that fight. I am on the same page as you. If I'm going to bet that fight, I'm going to bet Mario Bautista. He looked great in his last fight. When I was on the other side, I was on Oliveira in that main event. Bautista has shown how efficient of a fighter he can be. And, you know, the fact that he bounced back after that Nurmagomedov loss is very impressive. My only concern about the matchup with Corey Sandhagen is it – what you say happening, the inside the pocket, the takedowns, the control, happening too late in the fight. The only concern I have is Corey Sandhagen maybe getting out to a 10-9 lead, being elusive, using that reach, outstriking, and then midway point in the second round, Bautista starts to take over, and then we're looking at a 29-28 situation either way, like gearing up on that second round. So, but like I said, I think if I'm going to bet that fight, and I most likely will, it'll be on the Bautista side because I think he is the better fighter and I think there is value at him as the underdog.
This whole thing I'm so excited for. I mean, I really, really.
We also talked about the fight. Okay, so the fight we're looking to bet. What about the fight you're looking forward to just to like kick back, have a McDonald's snack wrap and watch for you?
It's Robert Whittaker moving up. For me, Krylov, I'm fascinated to see it and see what happens. And I'm interested to see if we see like a second wave of Whittaker. Like, what if we get that? Like, this is the next bounce up. This is the next kind of what we saw with Paulo, where it's like, his career's over. Oh, he actually just got a really big win. And actually, this weight cut's pretty easy for him. Boom, he skies up to the rankings. That's what I'm most excited for. I'm going to kick back and go, can you beat the living snot out of this Russian? And do you have some more left in the tank? And obviously, I think we both know this. I'm interested to see Gable in the UFC.
Yeah, for sure. I just wish he was fighting someone. I just feel like UFC debut, he should have been fighting a top 10 fighter or top 15 fighter in the heavyweight division. I mean, there's not really a lot of difference between an unranked heavyweight and a ranked heavyweight.
Exactly.
You know, like next week, you know, and maybe I guess it wouldn't be on the ladder side, but like in a couple of weeks, Walter Walker is fighting Thomas Peterson. Like maybe you don't put him in there against Walter Walker because he's the heel hook guy. But like Thomas Peterson, like I think Thomas Peterson's like 14th or 15th like in the world. So like put him in against a guy like that. But you're right. Yeah, I want to see what Gable Stevenson does and what they're able to manufacture from him. Yeah, Robert Whittaker, it's just the interesting thing. It's like that dude used to fight at welterweight, and now he's going up the light heavyweight. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, we talked about our basketball games, you know, a couple of weeks ago. Like, I'm 5'9", and I like to play in the post. I mean, that's what I feel like is like Robert Whittaker going up the light heavyweight. You know? I don't have any reason whatsoever to be in the post, but I'm comfortable there. It's like interesting. Like, how is he going to look just physically at light heavyweight? Against Nikita Krylov, obviously a long-standing light heavyweight and a guy that, you know, has a lot of skills, has some finishing skills, but also has a lot of vulnerability. So I think it's a perfect introduction for Robert Whittaker to the light heavyweight. I just want to wait and see. I think if anything, maybe the under in that fight.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You know, just car crash and waiting to happen. For me, I cannot wait to see what happens between Patty and BSD. I understand, like, it's maybe unfair to me for me to pick that as the co-main event, but like, there's so much importance, especially on the Patty side. You know, how does this guy that is a star, a budding star, bounce back after he was humbled by now the lightweight champion of the world in Justin Gaethje? And is he able to perform when probably the lights are even brighter, even though he was in the main event spot the last time, in the co-main event spot on the Conor McGregor card? And if he's victorious, what he's able to do with all those eyeballs and that microphone from Joe Rogan on what he wants to do next. Because if he wins and he beats a guy that's on a nice run and he's finishing people and violently doing it against BSD, a guy probably not a lot of people want to fight, Patty's doing it. What's next for him? Is it a Topuria call out? Is it a Gaethje rematch? Is it Connor? You know, there's a lot, and especially with a sport that needs stars and needs people that are going to do what they're going to do to see Conor McGregor's get together, tell their buddy Mario, hey, we got to order Paramount Plus, you know, let's spend the $8, not the 89 bucks, $8, but like, you know, that's why I'm super amped for the co-main event and just to see how it plays out.
I know we talked about it before, but just reiterating it, like the fact that Patty took this fight versus him is so insane to me. He could have easily done Rafael, easier fight. Gamrot, it's a hard fight, but like easier fight. And instead, he takes a guy that's red hot right now. And then it's pretty short time of his last go around, his loss to Gaethje. And if he loses this too, like what does he become then? Like the gatekeeper to the top 10? You know, like that's honestly like probably his route. And then everyone you talk smack to, everyone that you know, have these social media wars with is light years ahead of you then. Like, it's not even good enough to call him out anymore because they're like, hey, we're not even in the same league. Like, you can't talk smack to Ilya anymore. Arma, like, you can't. They're levels above you. The domino effect that this one's going to have, I can't wait for. Yeah. Benoit Saint-Denis is just, like, he's the perfect fighter that just kind of knocks out and like kills everyone, but it's like kind of like really silent. And you're like, dude, this guy just scares the living shit out of me.
Yeah, and it's interesting too because BSD is a guy that'll fight anybody and
anybody
is not concerned about championships. You know,
no.
I mean he's a guy that would want Oliveira. You know, he'd want Conor McGregor. You know, he'd just take anybody, fight anybody at any time, anywhere. Not worried about titles. Patty wants championships.
Yeah,
in my opinion. So yeah, I'm really excited for that co-main event fight for sure. So I know we got some other things we want to hit on because we're midway through the year, but I have a trivia question for you. And I thought this was phenomenal. And I was like, so it's the return of Conor McGregor. If you look at Conor McGregor's mixed martial arts career, he has fought only one person that is currently on the UFC roster. Who is it?
Is this including Max or not including Max? Because if it is, it's Max.
It's Max. Right? How crazy is that? I mean, even though I know he's been off for so long, but there's no one else on his now career in the UFC or MMA, even overall, before he even got Cage Warriors, before he got to that, like that is currently on the UFC roster. It is just Max Holloway. That's crazy just to think about, like, how long McGregor's been out and what he's done, and the fact that Max is still there. And it was Conor's second fight in the UFC and Max's first fight in the UFC. Absolutely. Good pull, though.
It's so insane. Looking at it now, you know how in the UFC when they have sometimes, like, when they have them and, like, they retire, their, like, picture's, like, a little bit grayer and just all of it are so gray.
They're all gray, yeah.
Oh my gosh. I mean, yeah. But, you know, hey, we've seen crazier things. I mean, what's his name? The guy that trains Alex Pereira.
Glover Teixeira.
Yeah, Glover. He had a crazy run post 40. So, you know, you never know. I mean, he obviously didn't have a crazy, almost career-ending injury like McGregor did. But, you know, hey, you never know. It's fight of the Irish. But you know what? Yeah. Thing about the Irish, they're really short. You know, so we shall see. All right, let's get into the halfway point of the year awards. So we have breakout, fight of the year, fight of the year, fight you want to see. Who's been top dog, your number one favorite UFC fighter so far this year? Who will be a champion? Which one do you want to start with first?
Yeah, I mean, we could just what's your first thought? So breakout yeah. fighter of the year. So I wrote down four names, but I think there's two that have to be absolutely right there. And unfortunately, the first one is Josh Hokit.
It's, yep.
I mean, what he's done in 5 or 6 months now, he is the most talked about or one of the most talked about fighters. Lot for the wrong reasons, but the fact that he backed up the shit talking he was doing with a brilliant fight performance and really weird fight how it played out against Curtis Blaydes, you know, a consensus top five heavyweight in the world, and then followed it up, you know, in a rather unspectacular fashion, but still expectations and pressure on him against Derek Lewis in the most talked about fight card of the year at the White House. Josh Hokit has to be that breakout fighter of the year for me. And, you know, quite frankly, probably right there as 1A, I'll give you three. Our Cyril Gane, just
yep.
again, because he, you know, he backed up what was looking pretty good against Tom Aspinall, even though that was the year before. With the performance against Alex Pereira, Carlos Olberg just being the light heavyweight champion, but now he's going to be out, and Carlos Prates. Like yeah. Prates is against JDM, especially going, you know, on the road down under and performing the way that he did and putting himself back in the conversation for welterweight championship. Those are the four that I wrote down, but I think the number one is Josh Hokit because of just what he's done becoming a guy that just got into the UFC roster and now is probably the most talked about fighter we have in currently in the sport. That's not Conor McGregor.
It's hard to beat Hokit, especially like you said, like the trajectory of he kind of really hit the ground running. What he did is what the UFC is hoping Gable's going to do. If we're just being completely transparent, just have this 6 month run, 6-10 month run where you're knocking everybody out, you're dominating everyone, and you have to put him in the top five. You have to kind of get him in that title shot thing pretty quickly. Hokit's the obvious one. I'm going to throw a curveball in for throw a curveball at you that I thought of last night. That's Joe Pyfer.
Okay. Okay.
So he was outside the top 10, like close to like 14, 15 before he fights Israel Adesanya. Just absolutely dominates Adesanya. Gets the KO win, jumps all the way to four. There's a little bit of a fear factor with him because of the power he has and because of just the danger of a fighter he is that some guys kind of like almost avoiding. And he has an opportunity to really take over that division when there's going to be a good amount of shakeup at the top where it's what's Khamzat Chimaev going to do. He's just maybe another option I thought of throwing in there for Joe. I think if he gets one more fight this year and he dominates, if it's against Nasruddin, if it's against Kayo, you know, whatever it is, he wins and he dominates, he's definitely in that conversation. But the 1-1 has to be Hokit. There's no other option.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think from a breakout standpoint, I think I'd prefer Pyfer to have another fight.
Yeah,
you know, I like the fact that Hokit's got two.
Yeah,
you know, that's where I'm kind of like, you know, basing the activity from. But yeah, I mean, he's got an opportunity and he's certainly another guy that 185 pound division you have to talk about. You have to keep your eye on for sure. When it comes to fighter of the year, you asked about that. So if you got breakout fighter of the year, the fighter of the year, there's really only two that I think can be in the conversation. It's Gaethje.
Yep.
Because of interim championship win over Paddy when he was a big underdog. He was plus 176. And then the victory over Topuria. No one thought, I mean, that was a movie. He was plus 385 in that fight. So the back-to-back wins over Patty and then Ilya. And the other guy, Sean Strickland, you know, he was not supposed to beat Anthony Hernandez. He was a big underdog in that fight. I mean, he was brilliant. He stopped Anthony Hernandez and then coming back and winning the fight against Hamzat Chimaev. Again, he was a big-time underdog. Those two guys are, I think, fighter of the year, at least midway through the year. Just, again, my credentials, two fights, two basically championship fights or number one contender fight, and then just how big of underdogs. I mean, they were under all every single fight. Those two, Strickland and Gaethje, were underdogs, and they won.
I love the photo of Strickland after he beats Fluffy. It's almost like he looks just as surprised as everyone else. Like his face when he turns around to the crowd. The Gaethje, I'll be honest with you, and you kind of hinted at it. I would not be surprised if that gets turned into a movie in like 3 years of like the story of Gaethje of, look, the guy gets knocked out face first on UFC 300, the biggest card they've ever done. And he's literally face first on the ground and everyone's going, and that's the end of Justin Gaethje. Comes out, fights the wannabe superstar. He takes him out, makes him, reminds him that there's levels to this. Fights the most dangerous man arguably in the sport, the pound for pound, arguably number one in the world. And he makes sure that he can't see out of his two eyes and he quits two times on the stool. Just an unbelievable story. And he does all of this at that age. And it's just such a quick turnaround as well. And when everyone just didn't believe in him anymore, when everyone's going, you got knocked out by a guy that was in a weight class lower than you, and you overlooked him and you got smoked. And then at the top of it, you lost a BMF belt. Does that have any meaning? Sure, maybe, kind of. But still got knocked down, got it taken away from him. To come back from all that, he has to be Fighter of the Year. And if you are like the biggest diehard Gaethje fan and you bet him twice back-to-back on those underdogs, good for you. I really wish I did. I bet him for the Patty. Really wish I did for Ilya. But I just thought Ilya was going to kill him. So Gaethje's my by far for number one Fighter of the Year. For the fight I want to see, though, Jordan, I went to the light. I went to the small fellas, the light boys.
Yeah.
Joshua Van versus Pantoja. Give it to me. I need to see it.
I got it right. Wait a minute. No. Go ahead. Because I do have a response, but go ahead.
So it's the forgotten almost goat of the division. And then the guy that still has to prove that he's the champion of it. And we saw glimpsed of it before he gets hurt. And then the jump that Joshua makes in his last fight where he survives the takedowns, his boxing looks the cleanest it's ever looked. And he's sitting there and he's proclaiming that he's at top of this division, yada, yada, calls him out to in the end. We got to see the guy that's running it, who's ran it for years and years of his career, versus the new up-and-comer and the hot guy that's just hot right now. We have to see it. And I want to see what Joshua can do against someone that has the experience of Pantoja. I got to see it because so far he's dominated. And if we're being honest too, this isn't a guy that can move up in weight. Like, he is perfect for that weight class. His body cannot take up a damage of moving up. So I got to see what this reign is going to be like with Joshua.
So it's funny because I actually wrote down three names in that spot.
Okay.
I wrote down Pantoja / Vaughn versus Manel Kopp. So I want Pantoja and Vaughn to fight, and then the fight I want to see is the winner of that fight to fight Manel Kopp. Manel Kopp smashing Brandon Royval, and then the performance he had against Haraguchi. That guy needs to fight for a championship. He was coming over to the UFC to fight for a championship. He had stumbled, weight misses, injuries. He's now on point, and he's still young in his career. So absolutely, Pantoja, Joshua Van needs to happen. Joshua Van still, fuck you, run it back. Like, whatever. You didn't even run anything. but I have to give the man credit. He did beat Tatsuro Taro, and I didn't think he was going to. But now I want Manel Kopp to fight that winner. That's if I'm talking about the flyweights and the fight that I want to see, it's absolutely. I wrote down three other ones. I'm going to just skip quickly through these. We definitely need to see Aspinall gone
Yep.
We need to see Kayla versus Amanda. Those two fights need to be, but the fight I want to see, because it's not official yet, is Michael Morales and Carlos Prates.
Yeah.
I need that fight badly in my life because we've got Machado, Gary, and Islam Makhachev. And I want to know who's fighting the winner of that fight. And it needs to be one of those two men. Those two men need to fight each other to establish who is the number one contender. That fight would absolutely be bonkers if it gets scheduled. And it's rumored to be. So I want Michael Morales, Carlos Prates, number one contender fight in the welterweight division. That's the fight I want to see the most this second half of the year.
Fireworks. Fireworks for that fight. I'm on the same page as you. I had those written down. I had one more to throw in at you.
I'm telling you right now, it's the one I hold because I have another one too.
Okay.
It's the one that...
Is it Yuri versus Kamzat Chimaev?
No, it's not. Okay.
That's what I had. I really want to see that one. I think matchup-wise would be interesting. That division would be interesting. And I think Chimaev's got to move up in weight. I think his days of being at middleweight are done.
Yeah, I mean, he's just – I don't want to fight anymore at 185. I want to go 205, and then the next day, no, I want my rematch against Sean Strickland. I'm just waiting for it. I just don't want to see it. I don't want to see it because, A, it was a manufactured rivalry. You know, I told you that, and then obviously we saw the result of it. And then the fight really wasn't that great. It really wasn't. So I don't need to see Strickland versus Chimaev. I want, you know, if Hamzat is going to stay at 185, fine, but beat one of these other 185, you know, pound contenders. Let me see that. Because quite honestly, if Dricus Duplessis is impressive against Usman, and he should be, he's a 285 favorite for Oklahoma City fight card in a couple weeks. Like, he should be fighting Strickland next. He's got two wins over him.
Yeah.
So that's how I feel about it. See, so I agree with you. That would be fireworks. You don't know Yuri, but it can't be a number one contender fight, right? Yuri can't be in like Yuri needs to like fight a couple of guys before. that fight would be.
I think he deserves a belt for being number one contender. Like, they should just give him that belt,
right?
Yeah, you
know? Just wrap something around him. And say he could keep it too, right? He could just hold on to it.
It's just yours.
But just see if you could get this. The fight also I want to see is a rematch.
It's a rematch.
Rematch in a lower weight class.
Rematch. Oh, Jan versus Mareb.
Oh, no. I mean, I do want to see that. No, it's a little bit higher and up in weight. We're talking about 155ers.
Oh, Armand versus Oliveira.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give that to me again because, you know, Armin, I don't know what he's going to do. Just give him a fight and have him look. But you know what? You really didn't beat – did you beat Charles? I don't know if you really did or not. Solidify yourself and fight again. That's the other fight that I wrote down. But, yeah, I do agree with you. Like, they just announced Song Yadong and Umar Nurmagomedov are headlining a card in Shanghai in the bantamweight division. So that means probably Sean O'Malley is just – waiting around for his title shot call. But before you get to that, you got to have Mareb and Pirion run it back one more time, right? They all have a win over each other. And Mareb was a dominating champion. Mareb deserves it. You got to give him a shot.
So. You have to. You had to do right by Mareb and give him that. If I'm also Umar, there's a little bit of part of me that's like, hey, what else do I got to do?
Yeah. Well, it's not what else do I got to do. It's like, why am I not fighting Sean Strickland?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, why am I fighting Song Yadong? Like,
yeah.
I don't get it. Like, I know Song Yadong was impressive in his last fight, but like, then Sean O'Malley needs to fight one more guy before he gets a title shot. Maybe two. You can't. I understand you knocked out Admin Sahabi, but that doesn't warrant a title shot.
No.
It's just it's frustrating. And by the way, like, you're speaking of that weight class. I know we jump into it. Like, who's going to be champion by the end of the year? So using our forecasting. For me in that division, it's Mareb. I think Mareb gets the fight against Peter Yan. He beats Peter Yan again, and he doesn't fight again for the rest of the year. So Mareb is my, heading into 2027, my UFC bantamweight champion of the world.
So obviously there's some big – I agree with you on that one. I think Mareb –
You do. You got Mareb too in that?
Yeah. I think Mareb's going to come back and smoke him. I think we're going to see a different animal from him.
Yeah. I just think it was, like wear and tear, like fighting way too many times and just, you know, and I guess he got somewhat dominated. Was it 50-45 across the board? I think it was, but I still, there's enough belief in me for Merab to be able to work those takedowns and just dominate Jan like he did the first time.
And also, I mean, watching that, I mean, we talked about it before, he just looked exhausted. Like, he just looked so tired, and that was, like, the first time we've seen him like that. And not to mention, like, the fights, but also the stories of, yeah, he's hard sparring the morning of the fight. Yeah. You know, just that, like, that stuff, and you're like, dude, maybe just a little bit smarter of a strategy.
Right.
You know, like, when you're that active, give your body some time to rest and recover so you can go into these more fresh. That being said, he's taking some time off now. I think he's going to dominate Jan. This is the easy thing, easy pick for me for who's going to be champion. It's Armand. I think he's going to be champion. I think he's going to get Gaethje. I think he's going to walk through Gaethje. And then he's going to be champion. I don't really want him to be because I think he's going to be a pretty annoying one. But that's – and then also my boy Ian Gary. I can't shut him out, dude. Come on now.
No, for the welterweight division, I wrote down Machado Gary.
Yeah,
I do think he beats Islam Makhachev. I think that he just is at the right time, right place in both of their careers to do it. And I just think that how Islam's going to want to like win fights, he's just not going to be able to do it against a guy that's going to be prepared to grapple if he needs to.
Yeah.
So I did write down Machado Gary as my welterweight champion of the world. But for the lightweight division, I actually wrote down Ilya Topuria. I think he does bounce. Because I don't think Armand's going to get it. I think he's going to have to fight Charles. I think Ilya Topuria is going to get a rematch. I think he's going to recover fine. And because Gaethje's not going to fight really anyways until maybe November, December.
Yeah.
I think that's enough time for Ilya Topuria to bounce back. And I think Ilya Topuria does what he was doing and supposed to do. So I got Ilya Topuria as my lightweight champion of the world. But I don't hate your assessment of Armin being it. If again he gets it, whoever gets it against Gaethje, I think wins the lightweight championship. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's Armin. And just to stick with the lighter weight classes, it's actually the guy that I aforementioned. He's going to have to fight probably. A fight's going to have to happen before he gets it. But I think Manel Kopp is your flyweight champion of the world.
Yeah,
maybe it's just recency bias, but I'm in love with his game, how he's looked the last couple of times out there. And knowing that both Pantoja and Joshua Van take shots in fights, they cannot take a shot from this guy. This guy hits like a welterweight, and you know, he fights at 125 pounds. So for me, at flyweight, Manel Kopp, but that's a risk because, you know, obviously a fight has to happen before he would get a shot.
Yeah.
Win the shot. You know, the other guys we're talking about are likely next or already have the fight booked. So I'm not sure how you feel about the flyweight division, but Manel Kopp's my 2027 champion or heading into 2027.
On your thing that you said of like right place, right time, or like whoever will fight Gaethje next, he's kind of in the right place, right time after Vaughn versus Pantoja because there's so much built up energy towards that, yeah. So much focus on themselves as an opponent because there's kind of like a rivalry that him just coming in right after. We've seen a lot happen where there's just a letdown, where the fighter's just not as focused maybe. Culture Ball's classic, like letdown spot, just kind of like that version of it in fighting where you're coming off just a hell of a war versus a highly touted fighter that you kind of like dislike, hate. The guy comes in after him, has this insane power, maybe you overlook it. Sleep. So I think that's a pretty good call. I want to ask you one question and then we can get out of here. Volk stay a champion in 2026?
I wrote down Alex. Okay. I wrote down Alexander Volkanovski. You know, I've got him beating Movsar Ivoldev, and then I'm not sure what would be next for him in the featherweight division. So I think once Alex loses, he probably hangs it up and retires. But yeah. I just think, even though Ivoldev looked really good in the back half of his last fight against what's his name, the other Englishman,
Murphy.
Yeah, Leron Murphy. But I just think that Volkanovski is on another level and still just at the top of his game. So I wrote down Alex Did you have Alex Alexander as well?
I do have I have Alex, but I have him retiring.
Oh, with a win. Okay. Yeah. I mean,
I think win or lose, it's his last one.
Okay. Well, I think he wins, and then I'm totally fine with him being a champ. All right, fly through your just, you know, no disrespect to the women. I do think Julian Robertson's going to beat Mackenzie Dern. Maybe that's personal bias too, because I got an affinity and a friendship with Dean Thomas, her head coach. But I do think Julian Robertson is the champion. But what about for light heavyweight, middleweight, and heavyweight? Where are you, real quick?
I want to give a shout out because she's won me so much money in the past. I'm not sleeping on Natalia Silva being a champion in 2026. If she can get that fight against Valentina, I know Valentina's been on a hell of a run. I know that she's probably arguably second for a pound for pound best fighter in the world in the women's division. But I think Silva can give her a lot of problems. I know she got a lot of help from the refs in her last fight, but don't sleep on it when Silva ends up getting that belt put around her waist.
Yeah, and you mentioned Valentina. What was the fight card? Where were they? Oh, they were in Bacow, right? They were in Bacow, and then it wasn't there. It was the fight before. Maybe it was when they were in Shanghai, or they were there for the Song Yudong fight. They showed her, like, she was in the crowd.
Yeah.
My immediate thought was, like, who is she there to murder tonight? Like, whose hotel room is she sneaking into to just poison and assassinate and like leave in the middle of the night? Because she straight up is a spy. Like, let's be honest.
She is.
She is a Bond villain. She is a spy. She probably has, you know, like 14 confirmed murder death kills, you know, like one of those things. Sorry.
No, you're good.
I love Valentina's of it.
She does need like a second career just as like a movie Marvel villain. Like DC Comics is launching their stuff right now. Like, she can get a good villain role of like she's just a spy for like the other team and does fantastic stuff.
Totally.
All right, running through it. So welterweight, like I said, Ian Garry, middleweight, my champion. I think Drakus Duplessis takes it back. I think he's gonna kill Usman. I mean, murder. That's gonna be brutal. Oberg's gonna take it, and then I think Aspinall, by the way, is gonna come back and just do some damage to Gane that we've never seen before. Yeah, I think he's gonna kill. I mean, not Gane, Gane, Ciryl Gane. I think he's going to walk right through him. And all transparency, by the way, Jordan, I don't think I ever told you this. I used to be the biggest Aspinall fanboy. I caught him early, and I fell in love with him. Also, didn't know he was English. For some reason, when I first found him, I thought he was Irish for like the longest time, which is really embarrassing on my end.
Also, I was like, a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people know that as well. Yeah, I mean, I wrote down Aspinall. I think he gets that Paris fight gets booked, and he does smash Ciryl Gane. I wrote down Sean Strickland. Because
really?
I actually don't think he's going to fight the rest of the year. I just don't. I just think that they're – or if he does, it was under the kind of assumption that it's going to be not Drakus Duplessis. It'd be Nassourdine Imabov, and I think he beats Nassourdine Imabov. So Sean Strickland's my middleweight champion heading into 2027. And my 2027 light heavyweight champion is Magomed Ankalaev. I think He runs through your boy, Khalil Rountree Jr., and then probably fights again at the end of the year in an interim light heavyweight title fight. Or maybe it's Oberg if he recovers dramatically real quick.
Yeah.
It's Magomed Ankalaev is my light heavyweight champion of the world.
I kind of feel bad. I know I've said this before, but still just feel bad for Magomed, where you beat Alex Pereira, then he beats you, and then next, like, you get Rountree. Like, you don't even get a chance at the interim belt between Yuri and Carlos. Like, that's
when you're on Dana White's shit list.
You're on his shit
list.
You're
on Dana White's shit list.
Yeah. It's hard to get off it. All right. Anything else for the people?
Yeah, no. I mean, this is, you know, obviously a week off. Next week, we will have a lot of selections for Conor McGregor's return. So, hope everybody has a great 4th. Celebrates. Fireworks, food, drinking. Family, fun, all that good stuff, some World Cup action. And we'll be back for the official Conor McGregor fight league, and I already looked at it. Like, I'm probably going to have like 12 plays. You know, a lot of the fights on this fight card are very like close odds. They're not the wide margins like we saw in the White House card or we've seen kind of lately. So a lot of plays, and we'll be interesting to see how the prop bets certainly shake out.
I mean, that's why we kind of said early on, like, this international fight week card's better than the White House because the odds, like, just look at them. These guys are a lot closer than the fighters that were at the White House, and like, the White House got over-delivered. So hopefully we see that too with International Fight Week. If it does over-deliver, just means America still number one, baby. 250. Yeah. That's all we got for you on the Unnamed MMA Podcast with Jordan Sherwood and myself, Mario Aaron. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you next time. Get ready for McGregor versus Holloway, part 2.